This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will talk about the Affordable Care Act, better known as Obamacare, with the man who runs Blue Cross Blue Shield of Louisiana, Mike Reitz. He's on the front lines of this development, a major one regarding health care in America and Louisiana, and there are some new developments in the offing coming very soon. We'll talk about it with Mike Reitz, the president of Blue Cross Blue Shield Louisiana. Last night, Ted Cruz, the Republican senator from Texas, pulled an all-nighter in the U.S. Senate advocating for the defunding of Obamacare into the wee hours of the morning. He was wearing black tennis shoes and started speaking at 2:40 yesterday afternoon, continued all night long. We'll talk about that as well, and we look forward to hearing from you. But first, the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Your numbers are 297-5633 and 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Our guest to begin the show for most of the hour is Mike Reitz, the President and Chief Executive Officer of Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Louisiana, the largest locally owned health insurance company in the state, with almost 1.5 million members. And we will talk with Mike Reitz about the latest developments regarding the Affordable Care Act. Yesterday and last night in the U.S. Senate, Ted Cruz, Republican from Texas, pulled an all-nighter advocating for the defunding of Obamacare into the wee hours of the morning. Here's how Senator Cruz sounded.
Do you like green eggs and ham? I do not like them, Sam I am. I do not like green eggs and ham. Would you like them here or there? I would not like them here or there. I would not like them anywhere. I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam I am.
All right, I think we got the impression, J.C. Kane. And the senator is obviously stalling for time around 3:33 this morning. The clock showed Cruz beat the record for the longest speech this year, and he is still going as we speak. So, Mike Reitz, your visit, I think, will be a little briefer with us today, but this is serious business, and there's a lot of uncertainty out there.
Sure is, Jim. Good morning. What I'd like to do, first of all, is to let your audience know that you've recently been named president-elect of the National Association of Statewide Radio Networks, and well, I just wanted to make sure that we pass along how much we all appreciate your leadership and the work that you do in media. So thanks on behalf of myself and your listeners.
But thank you.
Yeah, I can tell you we've had this date, October the 1st, 2013, marked on our calendar for over 3 years. Since the signing of the legislation, the biggest change to health care is starting on October the 1st, 2013. On October the 1st, 2013, is when these exchanges are scheduled to appear. We talk about exchanges, we talk about marketplaces. Those two words are used interchangeably, but that is where individuals will have the opportunity to go and shop for a health insurance plan that's appropriate for them, and also to be able to determine if they're eligible for some premium assistance from the government. So it's going to really revolutionize the way that people shop for insurance and pay for insurance.
Well, in a letter to the editor that appeared on August 1st in the Baton Rouge Advocate, you closed by writing, "Expanding coverage to millions of uninsured citizens is a commendable goal, but we must remember this expansion is designed by the Affordable Care Act, comes at a cost. It is important to understand that the promise of affordability is one that the administration cannot keep for everyone, and this might be the hardest pill of all to swallow." So affordability and accessibility, I think you're saying, means that some folks are going to be paying a bit more.
That's right. The fact of the matter is, when you expand coverage to 30 to 50 million Americans who currently are without insurance, there's going to be a price associated with that. And when you begin to give that coverage away to the vast majority of those individuals, somebody's going to have to pay for it. So there will be, in the insurance premiums on the exchange and off the exchange, additional taxes. Taxes on durable medical equipment, taxes on the pharma industry, taxes on the insurance industry. These taxes will be loaded into the health insurance premiums that our customers pay. So with the added taxes and the other changes of the Affordable Care Act, what you will find is that there will be increased cost, premium cost for the product. But the affordability piece is where the government comes in and says, okay, well, let me help you pay for that cost. So some individuals, based upon their financial wherewithal, will receive a significant amount of subsidy from the government, but those over 400% of federal poverty level will not. And that's going to be the bitter pill to swallow.
Well, earlier this week at the Baton Rouge Press Club, Jim Donilon, the insurance commissioner, said the Affordable Care Act is so complicated, including the health insurance marketplaces, that confusion will likely reign for the near future. Do you think it's going to be like that?
Yeah, I think that's why the legislation called for individuals called navigators to be trained and available to the public to be able to answer questions. Obviously, we have trained thousands of insurance agents and brokers. We have district offices all around the state ready and available to assist individuals in how to navigate these changes and how to take advantage of what's available through the Affordable Care Act. I don't think that many people will be able to do this on their own. There is a lot of moving parts, but certainly trained individuals who operate in this space day in and day out are there to help Louisianians.
Well, you've stated on this program before that once this gets in motion, it will be very hard to do away with because as we humans are, when we get something, we don't generally like to let go. So what happens if this gets going with all its imperfections? Will the American people rally, or will there be a widespread disgruntlement about how the system is working? Can you
I think
gauge
it really
that?
Depends. It depends upon the degree of imperfections. There's no doubt that this will not be a perfect launch, that what was originally envisioned for 10-1 of 213 has been compromised significantly. That's not to say that we won't continue to, and the government won't continue to build and expand and improve upon the vision of what was called for originally in the Affordable Care Act. It's the degree with which we're able to roll this out that will determine whether or not it will be viewed as a failure or a success.
297-5633, your number, outside the area, 877-217-5757. Mike Reitz is our guest, and his company, Blue Cross and Blue Shield, handles insurance for about 1.5 million people, a third of the state, and I would think that number could potentially go up.
That's right, Jim. We're expecting more Louisianians who now will have assistance from the government to pay for their insurance premiums to choose Blue Cross and Blue Shield as their carrier.
You say the health insurer tax will add an estimated $100 billion to health care costs nationwide over 10 years. These new government taxes and fees will directly impact premiums and drive rates up, Mike wrote in his letter to the editor a few months ago. $100 billion sounds out like a lot of money, but I think if I remember right, Mike, on this show, you said that health care costs before the Affordable Care Act were rising exponentially, about, what, 17%, something like that?
Well, it's currently 17% of the GDP. It's been rising on average between 5 and 10%, okay, depending upon the markets in which you live in. But the tax obligation for Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Louisiana is roughly $40 million. So you can look at that $40 million, spread it over the 1.5 million policyholders, and that's how we plan on recovering that tax.
Question from Rachel asking about the governor's refusal to accept the Medicaid expansion. What does this do as far as Blue Cross?
Well, I think it will make more people who were eligible for the expanded Medicaid, and that's people 100% of federal poverty level to 138%, who currently now will not be eligible for Medicaid, to potentially apply for a private plan and receive subsidies from the government the same as someone over 138% of federal poverty level.
297-5633, we will go to the phone lines with Mike Reitz, the president of Blue Cross Blue Shield. Denise Reeves writes, how do I find navigator positions in Baton Rouge?
The government has already issued grants for navigators for Louisiana. I think roughly $1.5 million in funding from the Affordable Care Act. And as I appreciate it, that's all being controlled out of CMS. So my advice would be to write Centers for Medicare Services, CMS, and apply there.
I would imagine your staff is on red alert right now because obviously October 1st is right around the corner. You're going to have a lot of phones ringing at Blue Cross.
Absolutely. We've created a plan. We're in execution mode right now, but that plan certainly is designed to accommodate a significant influx of activity come next Tuesday.
297-5633, next Tuesday, October 1, 2013. That's the big day as the rollout officially of the Affordable Care Act occurs. And Mike Reitz has been president of the company now for almost 5 years, but you've worked with Blue Cross for well over 30 years. Could you ever have envisioned something like this?
Not really. I think I grew up in a traditional environment where insurance was a private market business opportunity. And I think that the more and more Americans begin to realize the cost associated with insurance, there was a need for us to make some correction to the system. There is no doubt that I feel the system needed to be re-engineered. I'm not so certain that I agree with the way that it's being re-engineered, but I can tell you there was a need for this.
297-5633, Charles on North Foster. Hi, Charles. You're on the air with Mike Reitz.
Good morning, Mike. Most Americans don't know that after World War II, the United States created a non-commercial public health system in Europe. But they chose to remain with the commercial service in the United States. How does this governor justify turning down 400,000 people for health care insurance when he could have just as well given them vouchers the way he wants to give public school children vouchers and allowed them to purchase private insurance from one of the providers in the state?
Well, I cannot speak for the governor, but certainly, it's a controversial position that he took. I think, generally speaking, he felt that the Medicaid system was not a system that he wanted to invest time and effort and money in, felt that there was an opportunity for the state, quite possibly, to create solutions that were state-based and not necessarily federally based. But again, I won't speak for the governor. That was his decision, not mine.
Mm-hmm. With 4.5 million people, we have noted on this show, Louisiana has a lower lifespan, probably a lot more health issues than most other states of comparable size. How does that impact insurance and this new world of October 1?
Yeah, I think we can point to a number of factors. The reason why our outcomes in Louisiana always seem to find themselves in the bottom of the page. We seem to swap with Mississippi. But we enjoy a wonderful lifestyle here, and we're paying the price for it. But I also believe that our population went for years without being managed properly. The Medicaid division, of which there's roughly a third of the population eligible for that, was recently privatized to allow individuals and companies to more aggressively manage that care rather than an open access, free-for-all type system. So I believe that there are opportunities in the works today to address our health outcomes, and we're going to work hard to make sure that the commercial population and those that we serve in Louisiana have better outcomes at the end of the day.
That's 17% of the GDP that you referred to, Mike Reitz. How does that compare with, say, 10 years ago?
Ooh, I can tell you about 25 years ago, it was closer to 5%. I can't say 10. I would imagine split the difference there. But we used to pay roughly the same amount for education, the same amount for military as a percentage of the GDP. But military and education have remained the same, but yet healthcare has escalated.
From 5% to 17% and possibly going up. We'll talk with Mike Reitz, and we look forward to your input as well. 297-5633 is the number. Outside the area, please call 877-217-5757. Back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. Mike Reitz, president of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Louisiana, with about one-third of the state under the plans provided by Blue Cross, and about 2,000 employees working right now to get ready for October 1st. And I guess no matter how much you prepare, Mike, there's some things that you just can't anticipate.
There's no doubt that we will experience the unexpected, and that just happens. But all I can tell you is we have taken every precaution to be ready for everything we can imagine at this point. And we're just looking forward for the day, for when Tuesday arrives.
297-5633, Inkster Show at WRKF.org. Jennifer asks, who is more likely to pay more?
Well, good question, Jennifer. The way that it's designed now, based upon the rules under the Affordable Care Act that govern activities by the insurance company, you know that we have to issue policies regardless of health conditions. That's coverage for anyone with any pre-existing condition. But the other piece of the law says that you have to rate older people a lot closer to younger people. So based upon your age and based upon your income, those two will drive the answer to that question. Typically, you will find that younger, more wealthy, will pay more, significantly more, and older, less wealthy, will pay less.
Interesting. What about businesses? Some businesses right now are, I'm sure, factoring whether the penalty is a better bet than providing health insurance.
Yeah, we expect in 2014 for the group marketplace, those who receive their coverage through an employer, to basically remain unchanged. Our research seems to indicate that small groups will in all probability take a wait-and-see approach. Let's see how this thing goes. Larger groups who the administration has chosen to forego for 2014 any penalties for not complying with the law, we think that they'll remain intact as well.
What is the difference, Mike Reitz, between a company with fewer than 50 employees and those with more than 50?
Yeah, great question. Well, the law is clear. It created a stake in the sand, and it put 50 as a number out there. And if you're an employer who employs fewer than 50 employees, the impact is minimal. If you're over 50, you have to meet certain essential benefits. You have to make certain coverage options available to those employees. There are a whole different host of rules and regulations that you have to abide by. Otherwise, you're going to be penalized. And so that's what the law did. It suspended those penalties for 1 year to allow employers another year to determine how best to proceed in their employee benefit plan.
Another question, has the government determined what constitutes a full-time employee?
They have, sure have.
30 hours?
Well, under 30. So 30 and above, correct,
is
full-time. Under 30 is part-time. So that's the repercussion of this 50 number. Employers are beginning to consider whether or not they want to convert their workforce to more part-time in order to get under the 50 because the rules and the penalties are so significantly different in the under 50 market versus the over 50. And the fact of the matter is it's really contributing to concerns by the economists that in the over 50 market, there may be fewer jobs created and, in fact, jobs lost or converted to part-time in order to get under that 50 number. So employers below 50, just above 50, there's going to be a lot of activity to try to jury-rig that particular number.
What happens if an individual isn't covered and by law needs insurance?
Well, if an individual is not covered, there will be penalties applied to the individual. And that's the controversy we're hearing about the law and the fact that the administration waived penalties for the over 50 market and then they continue to apply the penalty to an individual who does not have access to an employer-sponsored, a group plan, and the law says you must purchase insurance, and if you don't, you will be strapped with a penalty. Well, the first year in 2014, the penalty is $95 or 1% of annual income. It's a one-time penalty. If you choose to not purchase insurance, you're subject to the penalty. If you purchase insurance, then you're obviously not exposed to the penalty.
So $95 or 1% of income is the penalty for not complying if you are an individual. And 1% of income for some folks isn't a whole lot. For others, it might be, but...
What's that, $40,000, $400? Yeah. Is that, if my math serves me
right?
That's right. So that's an annual penalty. So there will be a number of people, I would assume, that will choose to pay their penalty and not secure insurance. Then when they're diagnosed or when they need insurance, they'll run down and attempt to qualify for a plan.
What happens if they don't qualify, though? Will they get
treatment? They certainly will qualify during the open enrollment period, which is January of each year. January through March of each year, all companies will open the doors up to anyone regardless of their health condition, and we will be required to issue that plan. If throughout the year, however, there are conditions, extenuating circumstances defined by law, then you may be eligible out of that open enrollment period for a plan. So, for instance, you're divorced or you lose your job. Mm-hmm. Those are qualifying events that will entitle you to a plan immediately without having to wait until the open enrollment period. But simple neglect, just because I choose not to buy one and want to wait until such a time as I'm diagnosed and need it, there are going to be some regulations around that.
What do you see as the biggest flaws?
The biggest what?
The biggest flaws in the plan.
Well, I don't know if this would be considered a flaw, but it's just where we are in the country right now with being able to afford to pay premium subsidies to individuals who are making $90,000 a year, family of four. That the price tag for this piece of legislation is pretty enormous. So while it's not a flaw, it's just a concern I have as to whether or not there's enough money and enough tax-paying Americans to be able to pay for all of the subsidy that's going to be available through this legislation.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the company or the country will embrace this, or is it too early to tell?
Well, I certainly think that the people who will benefit from it, who will receive significant mm-hmm. subsidies from the government, will embrace it. The entitlement, that plan that the government is attempted to make available to Americans so that everyone can have insurance. They certainly will embrace it. I'm not so certain that employers and those who are trying to deal with having to meet payroll and the additional fees and taxes, if that's going to be readily accepted or not.
Well, Mark Ballard, in his column in the last Sunday's Advocate, notes that between 2010 and 2012, the percentage of Louisiana residents between ages of 18 and 24 without health coverage dropped from 33.5% to 27.9%. 27.9% is still a pretty big number, though.
Yeah.
So will suddenly everybody have health care, or are we going to have a case where this will be an incremental development?
I think it'll be incremental. I believe that the government is set unofficially. I've not necessarily seen this in any talking points, but the more we participate in conference calls with the government and the more we talk to those in the administration, they've set 7 million Americans mm-hmm. enrolled on the exchange as a success target for 2014. So if you go back and think about 30 mm-hmm. to 50 million Americans that are uninsured, if in 2014 we can get 7 million enrolled, they consider that to be a success. So that by evidence of that statistic would suggest that this is a journey. It's going to take a few years.
297-5633, Mike Wrights, president of Blue Cross Blue Shield Louisiana, is with us. And Stephen asks a question about whether the Jindal administration conferred with you or your staff at all before deciding to opt out of the Medicaid expansion.
No, that was a decision made without our input.
Now, Blue Cross, as I noted, in Louisiana is about a one-third or more of the people covered by Blue Cross Blue Shield. How does that compare with other states?
I think that's a pretty average statistic. We're seeing Blue Cross plans with commercial market share anywhere mm-hmm. from 40% to all the way up to 85%. Our commercial market share is in the 60% range, which equates to about a third of Louisianians. The other two-thirds are eligible for other government programs like Medicare or Medicaid, or they're uninsured, or with other commercial insurance competitors.
You have been preaching wellness for some time, and Mike walks the walk on this, maybe runs the run. But the people in Louisiana have some habits that are hard to break, and as we look around, we've got a lot of large people out there, and obviously that's a drain on the health system. You can't live an unhealthy lifestyle without paying the price at some point with health costs. So what does that do as far as the overall mission of Blue Cross Blue Shield in Louisiana?
Well, our mission is to improve the lives of Louisianians. And I really think that that healthcare reform starts at home, that all of us need to look into our own personal daily habits and find ways to improve our health outcomes, mm-hmm. our health status. And I would not suggest for a minute that people make radical changes to their lifestyle, but small incremental changes, small monthly goals will yield significant results in the long run. So my message is to look for opportunity to change those bad habits, to eat right, to move more, mm-hmm. to just find the small things that you can do that in the long run, over a year's period of time, will inure to some pretty significant health status opportunities.
297-5633, Matt in North Baton Rouge. Matt, you're on the air with Mike Reitz.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Good morning.
I have a question. If you have employer health insurance, how will the new Health Care Act affect that? I'll hang up and listen to you answer.
Well, for the under 50 market, if you're in a small employer status, which the government has defined as under 50, you'll see very little change in 2014. If you're in the over 50 market, I doubt that you'll see much change there either in 2014 because the government, through the Affordable Care Act, has waived all the penalties for noncompliance. So 2014 will be a transition year for the employer markets.
2014, and I guess it depends on who's employing you as far as how you'll be affected.
That's correct.
But I would think that some companies, if they're facing an increase in health costs, are going to pass some of it along to their employees.
As they have done traditionally, that's correct. But the new law also talks about a technical piece of the law requires the insurance plan and the employer to contribute a certain amount of premium subsidy to the plan so that you're capped in so far as how much you can expect the employee to pay.
Do you know what percentage that is?
There are varying percentages depending upon the plan, depending upon size of industry, so there's not one pat answer for that.
Is it generally at least half?
Oh, no, it's a lot less than half. So generally speaking, you could be responsible for anywhere from 5 to 25% of the premium depending upon okay. your type of plan and type of industry.
297-5633 or 877-217-5757. That's the number called by Bev in Lafayette. Bev, good morning. You're on with Mike Reitz of Blue Cross Blue Shield. Hi, Bev.
How are you doing this morning?
Fine.
Good. I have a quick question in regard to individual purchasers of insurance. Are they required to go through the web, through the exchange, or are they able to purchase directly through Blue Cross starting in 2014?
Good question, Bev. So October the 1st, 2013, next week, these exchanges open, and they're open for shopping, and you will shop, an individual will shop, for a January 1, 2014 effective date. If you choose not to purchase insurance on the exchange, there are still markets available, open markets available, non-exchange. So you could continue to insure individually with through a Blue Cross plan, for instance, without having to go to the exchange. The exchange is where individuals will be eligible to apply for premium assistance. So if you don't purchase your insurance on the exchange and you're eligible based upon your income for a subsidy, you're not going to get it unless you go to the exchange. But certainly we expect a number of our current insureds who make over 400% of federal poverty level, which is an individual at about $54,000 and a family of four around $94,000, we expect those people to probably stay off the exchange and continue to purchase their insurance directly from us if they're over those limits.
Adam inquires about the rating systems that are spelled out in the Affordable Care Act. How will they work?
Well, it gets a little technical, but we are required by law. Currently, we rate on a scale of 1 to 10. It's a 10-to-1 community age rating band, where if you looked at $50 as being an average premium at 5, we could rate down to $1, which is 1, or up to $100, which is 10. So that's 10-to-1. The law calls for a 3-to-1 compression. So that's where the older people are going to come down that scale and pay less, but a younger person has to come up the scale and pay more.
What about pre-existing conditions? That was a big part of this.
Sure, that's the second part, of the requirements on the industry, and that is that regardless of health conditions, Jim, we have to issue the policy. And if you think about any form or any line of insurance, you could be applying for a life insurance plan. You have to show evidence of insurability. If you're applying for automobile, they want to know what your record, your driving record is, how many tickets, how many accidents. If you want property and casualty, they want to know if you live on the coastline of Louisiana and are subject to hurricanes. But here, this line of what's considered health insurance, we have been prohibited by law from trying to evaluate that risk and apply a premium for that risk. So we must, regardless of your health condition, issue you the policy.
Mariba in Brobridge, you're on the air with Mike Wrights. Good morning.
Good morning, Jim. I just wanted to offer a little clarification and additional information in response to the early caller who inquired about whether you can buy a Blue Cross product outside of the exchange if you're an individual market. I think it's important to emphasize that people who currently have relationships with an insurance company or an insurance broker can maintain that relationship. And in fact, if they want to purchase on the exchange and take advantage of the premium subsidies, they can do that through the current brokerage relationship that they have.
I am very glad that you made that clarification, and I'm sorry if I did not explain that properly, but certainly we have a couple of thousand agents and brokers scattered throughout the state that serve our membership and serve Louisianians well. And you can maintain that relationship, and I would encourage our listeners to maintain that relationship with your agent and broker if you have one, and if you don't, there will be other sources of information available. But thanks for the clarification.
Thank you, Mariba. And we'll spend a few more minutes with Mike Wrights. 297-5633 is your number. And also hear from Dr. Hilary Cholet, a fascinating man who we'll find more about in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Mike Wrights, President, Chief Executive Officer of Blue Cross Blue Shield Louisiana, is with us. And come next Tuesday, October 1, the world changes with health care in the United States and in Louisiana. And 297-5633, we'll spend a few more minutes with him. And we have a fascinating gentleman, Dr. Hilary Cholet, on deck, joining us from California. Now, the website, for those who'd like to shop and see what is in the offing come next Tuesday and beyond, BC?
No, well, you can go to healthcare.gov, and that will bring you directly into the exchange environment come 10-1 of 2013. And in the meantime, and certainly after 10-1-13, you're welcome to come to the www.bcbsla.com website, and there we'll assist you in navigating through all the maze to determine the best way for you to proceed.
All right. Sylvester in Villa Del Rey has been waiting patiently. Sylvester, you're on the air with Mike Reitz. Hi, Sylvester.
Yes, I have two questions. One, I'm over 65. I'm now getting Medicare. Is it necessary for me to use the Affordable Care Act? And two, my wife's retired from the state. Is it necessary for her to enroll in it?
All right.
No change for anyone on Medicare, no change for anyone on Medicaid, and typically those large employer-sponsored plans. So you're in good shape. Your wife, who's retired with the state right now, is she over 65? And if so, she'll need to pursue the options that are available to her over the age of 65.
Mary in St. George. Mary, good morning. You're on with Mike.
Hi, thanks. Look, I have been told by I have insurance. And I've been told that I've been grandfathered in to whatever system. I don't really understand. But if I make a change, then I lose that, whatever that means. So I'm just needing to understand, what does it mean to be grandfathered into and the insurance system?
Very good question. If you'll recall, when the legislation was passed, the president said, if you like your plan, you can keep it. And what he meant was that if you make no changes to your plan, significant material changes to the plan, you can maintain a grandfathering status, which means you can keep your plan as it is today. There are quite a few states that chose not to allow any type of grandfathering. In Louisiana, roughly 50% of our block of business is grandfathered. They are losing grandfathering status as we speak. It's very hard to maintain grandfathering. That means you can't make any real material changes to your plan. So you could look to move from a $500 deductible to a $1,000 deductible. That change in and of itself could materially change your plan, and you would lose grandfathering status. So a number of agents and brokers really encourage their insureds, maintain your grandfathering. Let's keep that option available and open for January 1, 2014 to compare against those exchange-type products.
Steve, and we'll wrap it up with this one. How will the subsidy be applied, tax credit, direct deduction, in or reduction in premium, et cetera?
Yeah, the tax credit, you'll go to the website and enter a couple of numbers. One is your number of dependents in the house, household covered lives, and the other is household income. The government will calculate, based upon the plan that you choose, what total premium due is from the insured. We will receive the subsidy from the government. We will receive the balance of the check from the insured. So we'll match the two payment methods up and create an insurance plan for the insured.
Well, thank you, Mike. Good luck. I know it's going to be a busy time.
Thank you, Jim.
Always good to see
pleasure.
You. Yeah. Take care. Mike Reitz, President, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Louisiana, and a gentleman to boot. We're joined by Dr. Hilary Cholet. It's a story that engenders pride and determination in the hearts of Americans everywhere. A young man is born the great-grandson of a slave. He's accepted at Tulane University, but the offer is rescinded because Dr. Cholet's skin is too dark. He moves on to Cornell University, a football and basketball legend there, earns his medical degree, and moves on to become a surgeon. In an incredible new book, White Coat and Sneakers, Dr. Cholet's son, Hilary Cholet Jr., takes readers on a thought-provoking journey from modern-day Los Angeles to the turn of the century, Louisiana. Good morning, Dr. Cholet.
Good morning, Jim. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. Well, it's a fascinating journey for your family, your father in particular. Tell us how this has impacted your family.
Well, by writing a story like this, it gave a lot of depth to our whole family. In particular, my dad's life was so fascinating that as I researched it, I became aware of things that I didn't know when I was a kid, such as his great-grandma was half black, half white. She married a Harvard professor, and his grandma was half black, half white, and his great grandma was actually a slave.
Well, you have a family that has roots in Louisiana.
Yes, indeed. My dad grew up a very poor kid, and the title White Coat and Sneakers, the sneakers part of it is, when he was a kid, he was so poor that he got his sneakers from the trash of the next-door neighbor. And he was lucky enough to be the youngest of three boys. Their dad deserted them when they were young, and through the help of his coaches and his teachers, he survived and became actually very good in sports and was well-known in New Orleans, attending Holy Cross High School.
How have you traced your family history going back to slavery?
Well, there's a fellow in Switzerland, a Reynaldo Cholet, who traced our family all the way back to the year 1300. But recently, around the turn of the century, it was the Internet, and in particular the 1900 census, that gave us lots of information. And by capturing the data online from the 1900 census, it showed Rosa Olinde and Olivia Olinde, who are the great-grandma and grandma of my dad.
Now, you write about your dad. As I stated, he was accepted at Tulane, and then the offer was rescinded. What happened?
Well, it's not exactly clear, because through my whole childhood, my dad really never mentioned any notion of discrimination to me. So my research was done just through the notion that I have a copy of his acceptance letter to Tulane. He was heavily recruited by University of Alabama, by Notre Dame, and by the Navy. However, he wound up not going to Tulane, and there was a book written in 2001 called The Ivy League Origins of an American Obsession by a Mark F. Bernstein. And in that book, he mentions that Cholet was assiduously recruited by both Louisiana State and Tulane, but that when he chose Tulane, someone leaked to the newspapers that LSU had not wanted him anyway because he had Negro blood. So I don't know the exact circumstance of that. The name Clarence Pop Strange also came up. I believe he was a line coach for LSU. Just the whole fact that my dad never really mentioned any of this showed to me that if there was discrimination, it did not matter to him. He was the type that if a roadblock came up to him, it just meant he was on the right track, and he figured out a way to get around the roadblock.
Well, your dad was quite a player. He led Cornell to Ivy League football championships in 48 and 49, was Associated Press All-America second team, Chicago Tribune All-America first team. So he was a sensational athlete. He's in the Cornell Hall of Fame, also a remarkable basketball player. So I think Tulane and LSU missed out on a great player. But you say he didn't talk much about the rejection he had in this state.
No. In fact, can't, I don't believe, was a word in his vocabulary. I'll give you an example. When I was a kid, when I was about 9 years old, my dog got a hernia. So I brought my dog to my dad, and he goes, hold on, son, don't worry, and I'll be back. And he went to his office, and he got a bunch of supplies, and he flagged down our gardener, and we operated on our own dog. Then a couple years later, we were at a father-son golf tournament at Pebble Beach, and my dad was the type that he really didn't care what people thought. On the first tee, we were announced, and I hit the golf ball and made a good drive, and then he brought out his driver, and he thought that by putting tar on the driver head that he could make his ball go further, just knowing that F equals MA, force equals mass times acceleration. So at Pebble Beach, he brought out his driver that had coats of tar on it, and he whacked that ball so far it wasn't even funny. So he didn't so much care what people thought.
Well, you've had quite a voyage yourself in your life. You were a first responder at 9/11. What happened?
Sure. I just happened to be in New York City. I was at a trauma conference, a board review course at 7th Avenue and 31st Street with 180 other surgeons on that fateful day. After the second tower fell, someone came into the room and said, "We need volunteer doctors at the scene." So about 20 of us went out front of the hotel, and a German tourist bus stopped, and everyone got off. We got on, and NYPD took us to about 10 blocks away, at which point an officer got on and said, "I need four trauma surgeons." So four of us got off. They put us in North Shore ambulances and took us to about two blocks away, where we got out. It was completely deserted because it was about 10 minutes after the second tower had fallen. There was ash everywhere, papers with the edges burnt off. We ran into a fire captain. We said, "We're doctors. Take us to the command center." He said the command center was destroyed. So they set us up in a fire station about one block away, a couple blocks from the federal building. We saw eight or nine patients, mostly walking, wounded. One lady I saw was one floor below where the second airliner hit. She scampered out just with cuts and scratches and smelled of jet fuel. Through the early afternoon, we wound up walking to Ground Zero at the end of the West Side Highway, where the smoke had cleared. There are hundreds and hundreds of fire trucks. And one of the most spiritual things that ever happened to me in my whole life happened right then and there. I was looking at the Twin Towers, the ruins, and a homeless man came up to me. I'm sort of a hardened trauma surgeon myself, where I see so many different things. This homeless man had layers and layers of clothing, smelled of urine, had long, scraggly hair, but he had a box, and he had little cups of water, and he said, "Doc, would you like a cup of water?" Myself, I've had a lot of success. I've been very fortunate. I had a great dad and mom. But when that homeless man gave me a cup of water, I turned briefly, and in an instant, he was gone. And the spiritual feeling that washed through me was incredible, such that I decided I'd better learn to give comfort to people in a better way.
Well, it's a remarkable story. The Cholet family, and Dr. Hilary Cholet has been a trauma and vascular surgeon for 25 years. Tell us about the first novel, White Coat and Sneakers.
Well, White Coat and Sneakers is a story that starts in modern day with me as a trauma surgeon. It packs in a lot of the moments that I have experienced, and it shows what makes me tick, and through an accident, I wind up going back to turn of the century, 1938, New Orleans, as a priest, where I meet a little 12-year-old kid named Hilary Cholet. The story follows my dad through his whole course through Cornell and winds up back in modern day when he has Lou Gehrig's disease. And he is on a respirator, only able to blink his eyes and cry, and not able to move his arms or legs even a lick.
So it was not a pretty end for your dad, despite a remarkable life.
Well, even when he had Lou Gehrig's disease, the word can't didn't enter him. Have you ever played the game of horse?
Sure.
When he had ALS, when he could still move his arms a little bit, but he walked around with a washcloth in his mouth to catch drool. He asked my brother and I, "Would you like to play a game of horse?" And I'll be darned, but he beat us in a game of horse, even with ALS.
And you say that there were some so-called white light experiences.
Yes. As a trauma surgeon, I've taken care of many patients who come in with gunshots where their heart is stopped, and I'll crack their chest, open it up, and get their heart started again. And in these instances, when you bump across the line of biologic or clinical death, but you come back, that's when white light moments happen. And a change happens to me when I'm in an instance like that. And then the words that the patients give is like no other. So I include in my book a lot of my white light moments and instances, and even one real dream I had, which is very remarkable.
Well, the book is White Coat and Sneakers from Dr. Hilary Cholet, a remarkable man from an amazing family. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
We'll talk soon, I hope. And we'll be back tomorrow for J.C. Kane. I'm Jim Engster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.